Imperials, number 5 this week on the WKLO Tunedex. I love it. I love it. Pete Boyce put that together, the 1958 top hits right here on WKLO. And one of the people that, and let's see, Mr. Gary. Gary, you can go ahead and talk. Robin Walker's not the program director here anymore, so you can talk to me while we're on the air. I mean, it's all
really,
right.
Really good to see this big old guy standing right here.
Right. The guy that kept all the wires together for a long time, Bruce Clark, the chief engineer of WKLO, WCSN, KJ100.
Right.
WCII from when to when?
Oh, for a long time. I even go back as far as WKLO TV.
Right.
You remember TV?
Let's talk about that. A lot of people have brought that up.
Channel 21 went on the air, and I think 1953, stayed on there about 6 months and went dark. Couldn't get any programming. Nobody could get us because there wasn't any UHF tuners out there.
Gosh.
And it was just kind of a bad scene. But that site is now where DJX transmitter site is. So that's still the part of the property of DJX.
Well, what happened, Bruce? How come it didn't go on the air? Channel 21 in 1953.
We were on the air, but we had apparently we were supposed to be an ABC affiliate, but the good programs were taken up by Channel 3 and Channel 11 at that time. So we didn't have anything to really to put on the air except Jimmy Osborne, if you remember him, did a live Jimmy Osborne show from the studio. And I don't know if people remember Jimmy or not, but that was that's way back, isn't it?
Well, let me ask you this. Nobody had receivers. Did the management try to, like, give away receivers?
Gary Griffin, who used to be Jackson Smith on KLO, was talking.
I mean, did they ever do anything like that?
No, that cost money. They weren't going to give anything away.
But the few and the proud who had those kind of receivers had how long were they on the air?
About 6 months. Stayed on the air about 6 months and then went dark.
I have at my home, you know, in the basement of the studio at 307 West Walnut. You know, I get bored every now and then, you know, and I don't know what I was doing down there, but I go in the basement, you know, and they had some old surveys and some old pieces of information about the radio station. And one day I was back there and I found an ashtray that was made by a pottery company, Hadley Pottery. And on the inside it said, "Thanks from WKLO TV."
Channel 21, yeah.
So I guess they at one time did spend a couple of bucks
to
promote
the
place.
You may have an antique there that's worth some money.
Well,
Gary.
Well, Bruce, you can't have it. But yeah, I know. I don't smoke, but I do keep it around the house, and it's something to think about in the past.
Yeah. That was quite an operation then. The old General Electric transmitter, it's hard to keep on the air. And
how many engineers did you have back then?
Oh, gosh, I was just an engineer. The chief engineer was Ted Jones, and I don't remember. We had 14 or 15 engineers probably at that time, and I can't remember exactly.
Let me break in with a little story about I was in high school when Channel 21 went on the air.
Jim, you have to get real close to that mic, both of you.
And this close?
Yeah.
Well,
as close as you can.
Yeah, okay. And Channel 21 was going on the air, and I don't know if you remember it or not, but they ran a full-page ad in the Courier. With a test pattern.
Oh, okay.
And I took that test pattern, and I cut it out, and I put it in my high school notebook. I carried it for years.
Is that right?
Those were a long... They had some good programming on there. The dance party and... who was that did that thing?
Captain Video.
Yeah. A lot of those guys.
Wow.
I can't remember many of the other programs.
Well, I worked for you.
Is that right?
I was an engineer.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, I guess...
You weren't the chief.
No,
but
I was
got
not.
To be the chief.
Right. Later on.
So
third time around.
Yeah. I worked in the cave.
Oh. You mean the Henry Clay Hotel?
No, I was hired at the Commonwealth Life Building.
Oh, okay.
And sent over to the transmitter to work over there all night.
Okay.
And then came to the window, and I never saw you guys again.
Oh, okay.
You take it easy. I'll see you guys later.
Thanks.
Now, Jim, tell me something. What did you do after you left?
after I left
WKLO, yeah.
I went from there to Louisville Central Area, which is a downtown redevelopment organization and responsible for
all of this, and,
okay. all this mall thing, and yeah. And then I...
So your life really went downhill after you got out of the radio, just like everybody
like,
else.
Just like vertical line. And then I ended up over at XV and finally Wave.
Just like Gary here, his life went downhill. All he's doing now is saying open, you know, see you next visit, that'll be $5,000. That's all he's doing these days, you know.
He played it smart and got out, didn't he?
Well, Jim, good seeing you. Thanks for being here. Jim Russell
good
from
you,
WKLO in 64 and 65.
I guess one of the underlying tones about this whole last couple of days is it seems like everybody has fond remembrances, and we all had a good time, but everybody's glad they're not in the business anymore. I don't understand that.
I'm glad I'm not on the air anymore.
Yeah.
Glad I'm still in radio. I like it.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all of it. Of course, there's times when you were down off the air that the pressure was on, and it was our duty to get it back up and running again. With Pete and Jerry, we generally managed to get something going and back on the air and kept on trucking.
I know the kind of phone calls that Bruce didn't like to get because they're the same kind that I don't like to get, and they usually happen late at night. And you'd call him up and say, Bruce, we're off the air, and I can't get it back on, and nothing's happening, and the lights, and he'd say, well, you know, real calm, you know, well, just go over there and punch up that and do that and dial up 9 and raise it and lower it, and sometimes, you know, usually we'd get the thing back on.
Yeah, those 3 o'clock in the morning calls are the kind that you didn't really appreciate, but you had to go with it, and usually ruined a night's sleep, but... We managed to get you going again most of the time.
And, you know, here we were operating in a kind of a hyper business, and Bruce and Jerry and everybody was sort of a you know, kind of laid back personality amidst all of the, you know, craziness at the radio station. And you know, I don't think I ever saw you upset, you know, about too much about anything.
I can kind of remember.
But I do remember a couple of times. You know.
Me upset?
Yeah, a couple of times there. One time we had one of our Metropolitan disc jockey, a go-go's, dancing on the turntables.
I remember that.
You can do anything you want, just don't mess with the equipment.
Right.
Mm.
And the guy that used to do his transmitter watch from across the street, you know, when we had the big blue light up in the studio, he said, well, I can see that light from over across the street. What was his name?
I can't
Strandell?
Oh, Carl Strandell.
Carl yeah. Strandell. Yeah, he's. I can see that light over there if it goes off the air.
And what was across the street, Bruce?
A bar. I heard about this more than I saw it. But,
yeah, none of the engineering staff was ever found in that place.
Right. Not I.
Okay, what are some memories that you have of the radio station?
I go way back. I worked for KLO during the TV days, and then I got laid off, and then I went into business for myself, and then I came back to KLO, and I quit, went over to Wave, and worked over there about 4 or 5 years. And then I came back to KLO in 1959 and stayed till my retirement in 88. So I was here about 27 years as engineer and chief engineer. From sometime in the mid-60s I was made chief. I forget exact year. Probably about 63 or 4, somewhere along there.
And you were the guy instrumental for keeping Paul Cowley and Alan Bryan and Ed Bowman and all those guys on the air.
Right. But see, we didn't know... We did a transmitter watch then, and a lot of times if we had guys come through the studio that we never did see and never did know because we were sitting over there, they mailed my check to the house, and I never came by the studio for several years. They didn't know who I was. I was over there watching the transmitter.
Gosh. And who are you? Then, I'm the guy that could pull the plug on you
right.
Real quick. Give me my check.
Then when the rules changed and we could operate the transmitter by remote control, a lot of things changed then. We had first-class disc jockeys. You were probably one of them. Did you have a first-class
ticket? No, I was an 11th-class disc
11th
jockey.
Class. And then we had
According to Robin Walker, and then I moved up. You know?
Then we had the third-class ticket people who could operate the transmitter. All they had to do was be able to walk and talk.
No, I only had a third-class, Bruce.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Third-class meant you knew something about radio communications, and you knew something about the operation of transmitting equipment. Second-class meant you knew a lot more than that, but you had to have a first class to actually be on duty at a directional antenna
right.
AM station
mm-hmm.
or right. 10,000 watts or more,
right?
Mm-hmm. Which WKLO was both.
Right. It was originally a 5-kilowatt station when it came on the air in 1948, and in 1968 we went up to 10 kilowatts.
And that's what they meant by Big 10.
Big 10.
WKLO is the 10,000 watts.
Yeah, we cranked up the power. And,
you're official now.
I'm official what?
there's your Big 10. WKLO is everywhere.
Right, okay.
1080 sticker. And these, I believe they made these when they went to 10,000 watts.
Right, Big 10, KLO. I hadn't seen one of those in a long time.
Well, it's one of those things that I salvaged out of the basement with my ashtray, you know, along with a couple of wooden chairs, folding chairs, and a couple of old surveys and all kinds of good old stuff. That was a wild and wonderful place. Yeah. I mean, I have to admit that I was really happy to have been a part of that thing.
Right. I was around in August of 1963 when WKLO-FM went on the air, which, of course, is now WDJX. We cranked it up, put it on the air August 1st, 1963, as WKLO-FM. And at that time, we were 9.3 kilowatts on the air, horizontal only, and we could barely cover the metro area. But subsequent power increases and changes of equipment, and now it's a full Class B 50-kilowatt FM. So it's a nice operation now.
I don't guess the equipment's changed too much since you first started.
I guess. You know, that's funny because at one time we took account of how many tubes we had in the radio station, and at any one given moment we had about 1,300 tubes in operation.
Gosh.
So we had a tube checker, and one man spent most of his time checking tubes. And I guess when I left here in 88, we had just the tubes, the final tubes in the transmitter, two in the about 4 in the AM and 1 in the FM.
I guess it gives a whole new meaning to the term going down the tubes.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
All the old equipment was not as reliable as the equipment that you have nowadays. And, it took a lot more maintenance then. Not that it doesn't take maintenance now, but it operates a lot more efficiently and for a lot longer period of time.
Well, now basically all you have as far as tubes is in the final stage of the transmitter.
Right, the big power tubes. And, of course, there are some transmitters with solid-state amplifiers. In fact, the AM station, when you're listening to you right now, has a solid-state transmitter. It did when I left. I'm
okay.
Not sure what's over there
so
now.
There's no tubes in the transmitter that this
They're
is coming from, right?
Transmitter tubes.
Could you imagine Shotgun Sam Lee dancing on top of a CD machine?
That might be a little difficult. He wouldn't know.
I don't know if that lasts too long, Gary.
We had a great time, though, being engineers and trying to keep everything running. Went through a lot of moves. We started out at the Henry Clay Hotel, and there to the Commonwealth Building, moved over to Walnut Street, which is now Muhammad Ali Boulevard. Now you're over here. I wasn't here in this move. I'd already left when Stoner bought this facility and moved it over here.
You probably got wind of the move and said it's time to quit.
No, I really didn't. I didn't have any idea when I left. It still belonged to Great Trails, and I think it was kind of a surprise to a lot of people that it was sold. But certainly have nice facilities here now. And Gary, what are you doing now?
Well, Bruce, you know, I'm a dentist now.
Oh, yeah, I heard.
And what can I say? It's basically, you know, people ask me, how did I get into that, you know, the dentistry business? And I'd say, well, it's very similar to the radio business. I mean, it's a little bit of technical know-how and a lot of PR. And, basically it's very similar. It's a people business.
People business, yeah. And where is your office, Gary?
Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you for asking. Well, as a matter of fact, it's at Baptist East Hospital out in the doctor's building. When I graduated from dental school, I was fortunate enough to take over the practice, one of the oldest practices in the city of Louisville. A lot of really wonderful people, and so I kind of walked into a very nice situation.
A going business.
Yeah, I was already there, and all I had to do was figure out what to do with it. And so I've been very, very fortunate and very lucky, and all that good old stuff, and all those all those nights of sitting around and days talking to you and everybody else, you know, just sort of enriched my knowledge so that I was able to go forth with all my studies and make it through dental school and do all that stuff. And you guys also made my job studying quite a bit easier when you hooked up all those automatic tape machines and everything.
Sure.
All those little bitty switches that tripped each other, and all I had to do was just kind of sit there.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what I've been doing, and I'm like everybody else here. I'm glad I'm no longer in the business, but I miss it.
Yeah, miss it, and I enjoyed it. I'm glad I'm retired, and I enjoy retirement. And but it's something you spend a great deal of your life doing, and I have no regrets about the radio station. I really enjoyed working there, and came out real well.
Well, I have to admit that working for our organization, obviously it wasn't always a perfect situation. Nothing is, but at least we were working for a pretty good size outfit, and they had a little bit of money sometimes to spend on equipment. And, personally speaking, we had some really super facilities, which are sort of, I guess, antiquated, judging by what I'm seeing around here. But back then, these guys probably don't cue records very often.
I haven't seen them. Only Bob Klein can cue records. That means he's an old-timer.
Yeah, no kidding. Gosh, I used to think I was hot stuff when I had records on cartridges. And now we're back here to records again. But the thing about tape cartridges, Bruce, do you remember when they came into radio?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they were real... plus real advanced technology at that time. Finally ended up putting all the music on tape cartridges. That was a transition period where we had records and tapes. And when I left, everything was on tape, and now I understand everything now is CDs.
Right.
So, the technology just keeps on moving on.
Okay, quiet in the hall, kids. We are on the air. Okay, yes. Thank you very much. I'm going to call Mr. Gutridge, okay? Okay. No, I mean, you can talk, just to kind of keep it down, kids. You know, this is a class here.
You know, I've got one of those big 33-inch or whatever the size they are, CSAC recording albums that has, back in the bad old days when they used to do the spots live, and they just had these albums. They were quite large, and you'd put them on the turntable and cue it up, and each there were several tracks on the album, and the music might be described as lilting or fast or staccato or something like that, and the guy would read the commercial live over that music. And I guess as primitive as that sounds, today, I mean, I guess in some ways some of the equipment and the way they're doing things around here probably just as different when I was there.
Yeah. I mean, the big 16-inch ETs, we called them, that was almost gone when I came on the scene. They were going into all tape machines, reel-to-reel, and cartridge machines. And so I missed most of the ET days. I have a few old ones that I have at home that I retrieved from the junk pile. One of them is a 1937 Tommy Darcy cut, and I'm kind of keeping that as a souvenir or remembrance of what it was back in the 30s. So you guys don't go back that far. You weren't even born then. So.
Bruce, tell me, I don't mean to imply that I want you to say anything about when I was there or when Gary here, when he was Jackson Smith and beyond, was there. But really, what was the time that you remember while you were at WKLO when it was at its peak?
Well, I think that the peak time was in the late 60s, at the time we were making the transition from a 5-kilowatt operation to a 10-kilowatt operation. All during the 60s, when we were going in head-to-head competition against Wacky, seeing who could get the most audience, who could sound the loudest. And so the mid to late 60s and the early 70s were, I'd say, the heyday. And I'm not sure when you came on the scene, Bob. When what year did you come
right
on?
Right before Christmas, 1973.
73. So you were in...
Well, it was probably at one of its worst stages.
It was on its downhill...
Well, yeah, it came back when Lee Gray was program director in 1975 to 77, but 75 to 76, yeah. After 76. Yeah. Last 2.5 years, that was just about it.
Yeah, that's the time they decided to split off the FM. We were simulcasting AM and FM up to that time, so they split it off and made WCSN, which I believe at that time we were running religion and sports.
Right.
We had religion in the morning and sports in the afternoon, and I don't think that flew too well. Apparently didn't, because they eventually changed to easy listening. I think I heard Ron talking about the easy listening show that he did early on. So that was a forerunner of KJ, WKJJ, which when I heard somebody talking about the John Otting era, when he came in, started pushing the FM and AM into a rock format, and it came back at that time. So I don't know, how long were you here, Bob, at that time, from 73 to...
I was here off and on from 1973, or let's just say early 74, until 1983. So it was just about, well, Christmas of 73 till New Year's Day of 1983. So it was about 9 years.
9 years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I left one time for a year and then left another time for 3 years. So I worked here, out of 9 years, I worked here 5 years.
Right. I haven't heard anybody mention Gary Majors. Is he,
yeah, Gary
he,
called us this morning.
Oh, he did? Where is
yeah,
he now?
Yeah, we've been bad-mouthing Gary all week.
Have you?
Or all yesterday and today. really, Gary called this morning. And we brought up the formatic change of WKLO in the late 70s when Gary was program director. And he was kind of up against a rock and a hard place about what to do because of just different factors around the radio station, the sales department, the management. And I think Gary did the best with what he had to work with, and it was a sinking ship. You know, kind of hard for a ship to float with two big holes in the hull.
Right. He went through several different formats, I think, and he left, and he came back again when we went to a satellite feed there for a while on the AM. I think we were still with that when Stoner took over. I think they dropped that and went to simulcasting. I'm not familiar with all the moves, but I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
Where is Gary?
Gary is now, he's still here in Louisville, and gosh, you know, I forgot what Gary's doing, I'm afraid to say. At one time, he was doing well in real estate, and he was still playing music for dances on the side, because Gary was very good at that. He had a business where he did a singles night over at the Hilton, which is now the Ramada in Jeffersonville, and it moved later to the Marriott, which is something else now. But he was the originator of that, and that thing's still going every Sunday night from 8 to midnight over there.
I know. I remember him talking about it quite a bit.
Yeah, and he kind of hangs on to that because the guys that really know how to do it can make good money, and he's one of those guys. But he's out of radio, and I think he's kind of just decided to stay out of the business. And
sorry I missed him.
Yeah, but he was on the phone. He didn't come down here, and when I talked to him last week, he said that he wouldn't be able to, you know, to be on at all because he had another commitment. Well, things changed a little bit. He had to do something with his family, but he did call in this morning, so we had Gary on here. We haven't heard from Robin Walker. His real name's Bob Franklin. He is still living in LaGrange and has a horse farm and interested in horses out there, and was the program director of WKLO from 73 to 75. And I don't know, maybe Robin is on his way down here with a bazooka.
Rockin' Robin, huh?
I'm going to get him. I don't know. We like to hear from Robin, and we've all cut up and talked about each other, and I remember when you did this and that. And
Have you heard from Ernie Guttridge?
Ernie Guttridge, no. He's somewhere either in Illinois or Florida. So
Florida. Last I heard from him was in Florida selling real estate.
Okay.
But that's been about 3 years ago, so I'm not sure that he's still down there in Fort Myers.
Right. Now, this week I talked to Terrell Matheny, who is Mitch Michael, and there's an illness in his family. I don't think he's able to make it, but he was going to come.
Great.
I talked to, but I think maybe we'll get, try to give Terrell a call later on today and see if we can get him on the air. Talked to Bill Hennis, who sent us a tape that we played earlier today.
Great.
And he included Wild Willie Mitchell from the late...
You're bringing back a lot of memories now.
Right. Johnny Randolph was here yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
He told the story about leaving the radio station abruptly in 1966 on Christmas Eve by the hand of Ernie Goodridge.
Right. John Aspenletter.
Right. Who won. We didn't talk about this yet, and I don't know if John's coming back here today. He won $1,000 from KLO when he was at Wacky.
Yeah, he won the contest.
Right. And it was either, I don't know, 70 or 71, and that was really a scam. That was funny that he was able to do that. But Ernie, I remember... I didn't get to know very well until I came back here the second time in 76, and then and I was always kind of leery of him and would see him coming down the hall, and he wouldn't say much to me. And when I came back, he said, "Hey, could you do me a favor? Could you sign this part of the log that you forgot to sign in 1974? And we got to know each other real well after
right.
that. So.
And then there was always a problem with you guys signing the log.
Yeah.
Transmitter log especially.
Well, we had to play the rock and roll hits, Bruce. That comes first. Who cares if the radio station gets sued or has to sign off?
Right? I cared.
I know. I finally realized that.
Yeah, that was just one of the requirements that the jock became the transmitter operator, you know, over... they actually ran all the equipment and everything, so they had to keep the transmitter log, and that was always a running battle as to who didn't sign the log or who didn't fill out the numbers and were the numbers right and so forth. But we usually got it all worked out. Never did get fined or cited or anything, did we? I know of.
I don't know. That wasn't
never
in
did.
My department.
Never did. In all the years that the FCC came by, we passed inspection and...
Every time you said you thought we might be fined or be cited or run out of town, I was in my car heading down I-65.
Heading the other way.
And then when I heard it on the air for a couple of more hours, I turned around and came back to work.
We always knew, the engineers of all the stations in Louisville always knew when the commissioner was in town, because as soon as he showed up at one station, everybody automatically got a call to let them know that they were around and you might get inspected. So that saved the day a few times for us.
Bruce told a story the other night, Pete Boyce told a story about the other night about the day President Kennedy was assassinated, and the FCC inspector came in town and took everybody over to the transmitter or something, and they found out that the president had been shot, and he said, "Well, it's time somebody killed that dirty dog," or something like that. And he worked for the government.
Is that right?
You know, and I guess maybe... He looked one day and said, Jackie, check out the FCC and make sure that, you know, or whatever. He said the guy wasn't too fond of President Kennedy. But he said that the FCC walked in unexpected that day. Do you remember that, or was that true?
I don't know. That's Pete's story. I'll have to talk to him about that. Was I around, Pete?
You were around, but Bill Faulkner was the chief engineer then.
Okay.
And our antenna was out of adjustment, if you may remember.
Oh, yeah. I remember now.
Yeah, and we knew the antenna was out of adjustment, but it sort of just kept getting put off. And one day the inspector comes walking. Yeah, it happened to be the day the president was shot, and he checked our antenna.
And somebody's holding up a note out here that says he's here. That engineer is here.
He's
left? Okay, he left.
And anyway, this gentleman came in to check out our antenna, and we knew it had a problem. And he checked our monitor, and the reference points were out, and he went down and read the base currents, and those were out. And after that, he said, "Well, let's go out and check some monitor points." So we got the WKLO station wagon, which, of course, had the call letters 3 feet high on the side of it.
I remember.
It said WKLO News across the side of the station wagon. So here we are out taking monitor point measurements with the FCC inspector. And somebody pulls up beside us and says, "What's this about the president being shot?" Well, we're supposed to know, right? It says WKLO News on the side of the car. We didn't know anything. We weren't listening. We were out with this guy checking monitor points. And that was when he made the comment about, well, it's about time somebody shot that.
I didn't remember that story because I wasn't chief at that time. So right. I remember when the president shot, I was home working in my TV shop. Yeah. And I knew about it then.
Yeah, well, anyhow, we went out. We were a little shocked. We were all looking, kind of looking at each other like, why would this man say this, you know?